Our next talk is by Gebhard Zeltz of the University of Vienna, who will speak to us on the evolution of early Mesopotamian writing systems as reflected in the lexical text.
Here in Beijing, I enjoy very much. It was the last time I was here in 92, and the city has dramatically changed. You will not hear or read a lecture, since what I have prepared would be far too long. Instead, I will guide you along some slides I prepared, and to a certain extent you will find that arguments just read by Joachim Marzahn of Eva Kanzig are similar to the one you will hear in the following. Let me start with two quotes. The first one is of Peter Damerow, who once stated quite recently, "Proto-cuneiform writing was based on a core of standardized signs." The second one is by is a quote from Nick Feldhus, who stated, "Even though the lists and omen collections may include different, in our eyes sometimes mutually exclusive explanation of the same data, these are peacefully listed side by side. There is no trace of skepticism, no pluralism, no ardent discussions, and no questioning of the fundamental assumption underlying the scholarly business." What is this scholarly business? In the following, I will deal with the following topics: the two types of writing, which refers, we have heard something of it today, the so-called iconic writing, which some scholars would not consider to be writing at all, then the listing of items, action and narratives, then I briefly return to the Uruk lexical lists, and the subtopics are several types of sign formation, ordering the environment, ideological backgrounds, and finally I end with writing and lexical lists as a challenge for Mesopotamian epistemology. This here is from the Pasiega case, analytic writing, so to speak, which provoked many different interpretations, and so it's left to pure guesswork. Are we in the same situation as with the early scripts in Mesopotamia? This is the underlying question. This here is Rauf Animals, of the pre-writing period from Uruk, of cylinder seals, and you see there's a sequence of animals, and according to Boehmer, these were the earliest cylinder seedings we found. Much different is already the next slide. Here is your offering procession, and actually here we start to have a narrative much in the same way as Eva in her paper argued for the sequentialism as an important aspect of writing. Here, the Uruk race, already mentioned by Eva, is a true narrative. You can read it without the knowledge of any language and is clearly detached from the language itself. So the underlying question is if we should consider writing always as language or speech-based, as it is usually assumed. Here are contemporary cylinder seals, which again have a display, a narrative, and actually which have a sort of referentialism, because you see here on the upper slide on the left, you see actually depicted the Uruk vases. Actually, there were two of them, only one is preserved at the moment. Another one was excavated in parts, but apparently, as far as my information goes, is of uncertain housing nowadays. The common assumption today, or nowadays, is that the early stages of writing in Mesopotamia show a strong links to the needs of administrative documentation. Since you are all familiar with these theses of Amier and Schmart-Bederat, I do not dwell on it any longer. Here you have this spheric clay boule, already mentioned earlier by Bob Englund, and which the depiction of number signs and early signs in conjunction with the tokens they contain are considered to be a pre-form of writing. However, this summarizing of items comes very close to what Gordon Whittaker earlier named the notation system. So it is difficult to see how this actually will develop in true writing in the sense of the representing the narrative of a given language. This is taken from an earlier publication of Bob Englund and Nissen. We will see an analysis of the notation system of the expenditure of a certain kushim from the Uruk tablets. The earliest stages of writing, the so-called Uruk IV and Uruk III periods, have some 800 signs, sign forms, and about 60 different number signs are also attested. It is noteworthy that a majority of these signs are apparently not pictographic, or at least there is no possibility for us to see the real referent behind them. Moreover, as stated in my quotation from Davaro, the numbers of basic signs must further be reduced because a considerable number of them are signs combinations or signs alterations. Here you have some example of early inscribed text, actually very similar in the layout to the text found by an Abydos, for which Dreyer claimed that they are actually the first attestation of phonological writing, the phonetic writing in pre-dynastic Egypt. Some modification of signs following the research of Jean-Jacques Lasner, which are very common in these early Uruk texts, are the turning of signs, mirroring of signs, the modification of by strokes, the ka sign we have seen earlier, or the combination of signs. Other forms are the frame signs or the insertion or juxtaposition of signs, all taken from the research of Glasner. Glasner also in his book Écrire à Sumer draw attention to the fact that strangely enough the sign for foot never designates the body part it represents. It's always used in order to mark verbs like to go, to stand, to bring, never foot. For this, in a very early, it doesn't get the font here, in a very early list you find the sign nir, which means foot, way. Depiction of it is actually the head of an unidentified animal. Signs we can easily, or more or less easily understand, are the representation of the arm, da, with the modification, meaning A2, yeah, these small strokes added, meaning arm power and force, or the turned sign of it, meaning the left side, the left hand, and so on. An interesting sign is also an early sign, is the sign Ra, which means Akkadian Mahasu, to stroke, and so on. And the question is if this sign variation attested in Uruk text with a sign C plus Gut or C plus Gu 4 actually is a variant of the sign, and what does this mean? Let me now come to one sign which is more or less the core sign of a list, which again Jean-Jacques Lasner developed in his book. This is the mash sign. The mush are two crossed strokes, and my suggestion is that it's actually the representation of a gesture, actually the two crossed fingers designating half. If that is correct, that is an additional proof that Sumerian played a role in the development of these early sign system, because already in the earliest text, with this sign, you also mark the word for goat, which is in Sumerian mush. So it's based on homophony, and that would add additional proof to the much discussed question in which language these early texts are written. However, I do not intend to suggest that they are read in Sumerian, only that Sumerian played a certain role in the development of these earlier signs. Yeah, mush from the Nissen-Englund list, denoting half as well as the he-goat. And I think there is an explanation to come from the mush to the other small cattle sign, udu, which designates sheep, which is more or less the mush sign, sorry, with a circle. And my suggestion would be that just the perception of udu is the one, the roundish form of small cattle, and this provoked the choice of the circle to add to the mush. However, if you look at what signs could be underlie this circle of the udu sign, you find chi, duk, or sha, which is apparently in origin more or less a circle, or perhaps lagab. Lagab usually is perceived as a square sign in later tradition, but the sign combination, the combined signs, you see below number 313 following, shows that it originally also was a circle. Here in the famous Shunikin sign, which represents the word for summa in later text and is very often used in administrative text, you see that it's actually a rectangle and not a circle, but I do not think that that's really can raise much objection against the proposed interpretation. Here you have a list for the small cattle, which according to, this is a list by Bob Englund, and this is the original one adopted from Jean-Jacques Lerch's book, which shows how the different designations for these animals could be derived from the basic sign mush. So you see a very elaborate process of sign formation in progress here. Other examples of sign formation I just briefly show you. This is the sakshu, probably, which depicts a head with a cap or something. And then you have a very strange sign, which is a head with the ears, with perhaps this red geshtu too. And you have here the ugu sign, which is sakun u. So this is only used here to show you how these sign, graphic sign variations came into. It should be read shur. That is esu, which is the meaning is angry or something like this. So, however, the sign formation was not ended by the end of the Uruk III period. A very interesting sign is the sign Il-Tu or Dusu. It's an early dynastic invention of a new sign. It's based, actually represents a basket and a head, and perhaps is represented on a prototypical gesture. We know that a lot of these people in ancient Mesopotamia were engaged in carrying baskets, feet, and building activities or the like. Let us now turn to the Uruk lexical lists, to the conventional naming of them according to the publication in archaic texts from Uruk. There you see the loo list, the official list, cattle, animal, fish, birds, the swine or dog list, tree, wood, and so on. Feldhus, in his very important article recently, tried to show the following thing. First of all, these lexical lists center around the environment and the surrounding of the people. So he drew our attention to the fact that there is no list of gods in the early attestations, and that this is restricted purely to the environment of the scribes. Besides, there are some word lists, the former tribute list, interpreted by him as the word list C, which shows that these lists had their primary setting in the scribal training of that time. Here, an example of the development of the science from the earliest Uruk list to the early dynastic list, which is very important for us since such examples prove the continuity of the lexical tradition, showing that despite some changes in the tradition, they have a tradition of the cuneiform writing surely based in the Uruk texts. This is a photo of the same list, the so-called loo list or offices list, and now an example with a small alteration, which you hardly can see here, before the bull. Originally in the graph you find in Jean-Jacques Lasner's book, there is a circle. But Nissen once told me when I discussed this ceiling with him, that's actually the sign SM, which is meaning feast in later tradition, which is depicted between this reed standard considered to be an emblem of the goddess Inanna, and at the right hand you have the bull. What is interesting is above the Dingir sign, this is this star sign at the left, you have an inverted sign. The whole is probably referring to the two aspects of the goddess Inanna as the morning and the evening star, and culturally very interesting because it first shows that you have an astral perception of deities at this period, and secondly, it shows that the people were very well aware that the Venus is sometimes a morning and sometimes an evening star. However, this you would not consider this as an inscription. Nevertheless, behind this depiction, of course, there is a whole idea referring to religious worldview of that period. To the sign formation, back to the sign formation, you have several sign formation possibilities. Here is the sign Duk, is the so-called frame sign, which resembles, I have been told, to the so-called Bushu signs in Japan. And then you have certain alterations. I mean, there is inscribed the sign Gish, She, and so on. Another example is here the Pisang plus the Dup sign inscribed, reading Shat Dupa, perhaps another indication that the inventor of those signs was Sumerian, since the Dup sign has probably here a phonetic value. The same has true for the SN plus N. The N could be a phonetic indication. It is, of course, not to be excluded in this context that it is has a semantic value. Same for the sign men, meaning crown, where the N is inscribed, could be semantic or phonetic indication. The frame sign Duk is one of the most common, widely used frame signs. As you see here, I've just copied the list of the Zatu volume, and you see the many examples. I won't dwell on them further on here. The SM sign is another important frame sign with certain alteration you can find in this list. Frequent other frequent frame signs are Duk, Duk, Lagap, and Natu. And here some examples how they can be combined. This I skip over. I go to the general principle of organization in lexical lists. One of the principle is the acrography or telegraphy. Usually the acrography was mentioned so far in the other presentations, but there's also a tendency to order the different items according to the last sign. Then we have varying positions of a specific individual cuneiform character. We have similar sign forms or graphic variants put together. You have polysemic values of a given sign, or you have semantic relation, association of different graphemes, sometimes language related, sometimes. And of course, the phonetic association or homophony is a good attested example for the organization of lexical lists. Here, a copy of the formerly shown the photograph of the loo. Here's the copy, and here the first lines with the famous first entry, Nam Eshta, which is by some people considered to represent a title of early Uruk ruler. I do not think that we actually should assume that there was just one man in the position of a ruler in Uruk. Perhaps there have been several officers who contributed in an unclear way to govern the city or the land Sumer. Examples to how this loo list is organized. You have here the sign in loo 2931. You see there's actually ordering to the following the second or the last sign of the individual case, the Umuntu sign. And you have other examples of telegraphy in Lu 71, 72, with the Suhor sign as their last sign. In different lists, you find quite good examples for hierarchical ordering. Let's say the archaic list animals is organized according to Abtu the cow, Gut the ox, and Amad calf. Or the just mentioned Lu list, you have the Nam lord, or whatever the precise meaning of it is, Gal and Sangha as primary ordering principles. Here there is a transcription of the some of the first lines of the Lu A with an attempt to establish the later interpretation. Of course, we can never know if in early dynastic times or even later that the understanding of such entries was actually correct to the intention of those who invented the list. This another list is professional list with the Uruk tradition, FD stands for early dynastic, and later lexical tradition. Back to the ordering of this list, you see here the from Lu line 14 to 18 and line 35 to 36, just to give you an example, that here is the Gal, one principle of the ordering. And as you see, the line 15 with the sign combination Nun Me, which is traditionally read Ab Gal, indicates actually that the reading here of the two signs, namely Ab Gal, was the reason for including this feature into the list. Then you have in line 35, 36, another principle you find very often in this list, that you combine the opposition of a certain expression. In this case, the big one, the small one. This is the structure of Lu A, actually based on research of my PhD students, Klaus Wagensonner, who tried to show which principles are probable or certain, let us say, the sure graphical similarities. There's the red mark, it's the num sign that you have in from the first line, the following, then some unsure, and so on. Okay. So you just some further examples. This is just a brief remark on the ordering of the signs. As you, some of you know, of course, the signs in the individual entries did not follow a sequential order from the beginning. And one wonders, and it was alluded in the paper of Eva, how this ordering came about. And as you can note, I have not finished that. I did some research, and I only observed with some certainty that the Dinkie sign, which is the first sign in the left uppercase, actually is usually put on the first slot in such a case. And one wonders if this does not represent some ideological perception of the signs. This is even more difficult to understand because the font is not Rido, that's Schuppa, and that's an extract of the Diary Oxford, where you can see in other principle how this association goes. That is Samush Schuppa with Shuboom, which is a kind of shell. Then Ina Shubi Eli is a quote, and Elum Pure is an equation of Schuppa in the later lexical lists. Then you have Schull, which is with the equation Etlum. Etlum is an equation in these theory lists. And you have Dinge Damu, which is by associative way included here in the theory list because it is considered to be an epiphany of Tammuz. And the following, of course, is then quite understandable since Dum is Tammuz, being considered one of the shepherd, the prototypical shepherd, the equation shepherd is quite susceptible. I do not want to keep you longer. I have some more slides prepared. I just want to end to draw your attention to the importance that we are aware of the ideological background or the worldview of such lists as the associative chain for the legitimization of the ruler in Haraobulu or in Phantom Tollere. That is Haraobulu 2, 6, 10, wound left his lap, towards his lap, placed on his lap, and then prince ruler. This is only understandable from the background of the early dynastic perception of the ruler being perceived as a child of the deities. So I end here and thank you for your time and attention.